Hello and welcome to a Touchdown Fracker podcast. I'm your host, Lewis. On this week's show, we have a very special guest as well as our normal regulars. We have Io joining us, Mario, Kane and Yas. Our special guest this week is a certain Mr. René Maric. For those of you who may not be familiar with René, René is a blogger and an author and gives incredibly good insight into the world and of modern day football and tactics. He does have a website. I'm not going to say it on the show because I will embarrass myself. My German is absolutely pathetic. But it's all in English. I'm sure you will enjoy it. I will put it in the information section at the bottom of the pod. So yes, give that a read. And whilst you're doing that, subscribe to us on iTunes, give us a review on iTunes, SoundCloud, show us some support. And I really hope you enjoy the pod. Okay, so to get today's pod started, I'm going to hand you over to Kane, and he's going to have a little brief interview with René, just to give a little bit of insight into what René's all about. So, Kane, the floor's yours, and hope you enjoy René's little part.
All right, thank you for that, Lewis, and again, thank you for the co-host for attending today, and René for giving us the time to be able to ask him a few questions and find out how his mind works when it comes to tactics in football. And I guess the first question that I would like to ask you is, I mean, how did you get about getting into analysis? I mean, what was the inspiration and how did you start?
That's hard to say. I once made an interview already in English where I talked about this, and it's just fun. It's like solving a riddle. And it's just like curiosity, why something happens, how does it happen? And so I always, when I was very young, I am from a family where everyone is crazy for football. So we would always discuss football and talk about football. And we're from a Balkan culture, from Croatia. So we have a very aggressive way of talking and arguing. And to survive there, especially as a young boy with adults, I literally had to search for arguments which are tough to beat. So started to looking about into tactical analysis, stuff like this, already when I was very young. I play football myself. I still do. So this was also like so the two big reasons. Later I started playing a little bit of various football games. And I just created like a environment for myself where I would always just be in touch with various aspects of football with different perspectives, and I try to analyze the football in different ways all the time since I was very, very young. And then I started blogging, and that's the story.
Okay, that's great. And I mean, with the blogging, you know, for those who follow a lot of football fans on social media sites like Twitter, for example, there's a very unlikely chance that you wouldn't have come across one of your blog articles or someone that you work closely with, a gentleman called Adin Amanasic. I think he's a US based football strategist like yourself, and with your blog spielvalorung.com, I mean, it's considered one of the most high profile football strategy websites out there. I mean, how did that come about? I mean, how was that something that you had in the pipeline for a long time? Is it something that you started off by yourself, or you worked with other people? I mean, how what was the inception for that blog?
In Germany or in Austria? I'm from Austria.
Okay.
In Germany and Austria, there are different sites like forums and blogs where people just talk about football, and Tobias Escher was the first guy who was a little bit copying Michael Cox from Zone Marking, and he had his own site called Taktikguru.net. That's a German site about football tactics. And him was blogging on this site. I was writing in a forum, and two other guys were blogging on a different section of our page, Spox, if you know it.
Yep.
And we came in touch with each other, and two of them developed the idea to create a site together, because together you can have more content, you can have more discussions, you just can learn from each other, help each other, cover more games. And we started to think about a blog together, And then we created Spielverlage. We were five people in the beginning. Two of them stopped, but we got different authors. So the German side, I think, has more than 10 people writing, some even about different things, like Marco Mazirka at our page writes mostly about financial analysis. Marco Henseling is writing about training theory. I wrote a book with him. It's coming out in October in Germany about training. And yeah, that's the... So this developed together into one site. We were getting new people and developed like a big site, which is mostly about football tactics, match analysis, but with sometimes different types of articles. And we also try to create the English site. And I'm always reading other work, tactical analysis, statistical analysis. And because of that, I found other tactical analysts on the internet, like Adin. And I thought it would be cool to gather them and create the English version. And it's fine. I'm very content with it.
Okay, that sounds great. And I mean, obviously, with the blog, what I've noticed when I've read a lot of articles on there is the language is very specific, is very detailed. I mean, I used to read a lot of Michael Cox's work on zonal marking. That's what probably got me really interested in match strategy and match analysis. But in terms of the detail, not just with his blog, but with dozens of other blogs and other websites to do with tactical analysis, I mean, the level of detail that you and your colleagues display is immense. So, I mean, in terms of the audience, did you have a particular type of football fan in mind? Was it more so for professionals? Was it more so for casual fans? Because there'll be some football fans, which I would consider the layman, that would feel it's a little bit more complex than it could be. I mean, what would be your thoughts in terms of the audiences for your work?
To be honest, I'm not really thinking about the audience. I'm just writing down what I see for my perspective, what's happening. And I don't really, maybe the other authors think differently, but I don't really think we are targeting a specific audience. We're just describing what we see. And sometimes it's very detailed, sometimes it's maybe even less detailed. It can vary depending on the game, depending maybe even on the mood of the author, and maybe just depending on the personality of the author and his opinions about football. Because there, if you read the German site, and if you read it in German especially, you will notice every author has a basic quality. Every author, for me, is very good. But everyone has a different style. And I would never tell anyone at the site, neither would Tobias or Martin or Tim or anyone from our side, tell anyone how to do the analysis. We can help, we can discuss, we do all the time, talk with each other every day. But there is no real style we want to be. There is no real target audience. It just... You're good, you think a similar way to the others, and you like to write, and you can join, and you can share your views on football, and that's basically it. If people like it, it's great. If people don't like it, it's their opinion. I respect it. I'm sure we may make many mistakes, and it's not a problem. It's just my opinion and my way of describing what I see in a football game, and I'm always very, very happy and very pleased if people like it and if people read it. But in the end, it's mostly for me to reflecting on what I see and to maybe learn to see more. And that's my primary motivation.
Okay. And in terms of what you see, I mean, the great thing about football is that no one thinks the same. It encourages there to be variety in football, it encourages there to be different ideas and different approaches. And my personal philosophy when it comes to the way big teams, small teams approach matches is that it's not so much about the style of football that you play, but the execution, something I'm very, very forthcoming with. So the way you view football, or the way you view the tactical aspect of the way teams go about their job, could you describe us the process?
I've got this question very often, and I have a hard time describing how I watch football. I believe that most people have a very different, a very distinct view of viewing football, and I'm not really looking out for stuff to see. I just watch the game, and I notice differences to what's the orthodox style of play. I see the distances. I basically, when I am watching football, every player has specific aspects he fulfills in a, just in a specific position towards the ball. And because of this, he has an effect on the game. Without the ball, with the ball, and I'm just seeing these effects, and then I can describe how they interact. That's basically it. So this is my way of viewing a game. I'm not really a fan of any style. I'm not really a fan of any club. I like Bayern, mostly because of the history, what happened in the Nazi side, because they were very Jewish club, basically, and they had a very, very strong bonding to the former president. Stuff like this is what I like about Bayern, and I like the history of the clubs more than their style, because for me the style is not that important, as long as it's effective, as long as it's intelligent, as long as the players are used properly, and the potential the players have is more or less fulfilled, or at least tried to be used. And that's for me the most important, so I really don't have any emotional opinions about football, and I just enjoy watching it. And when I watch it, that's, I'm just describing the interactions of effects the players have in different situations.
Okay. And I mean, in terms of how effective teams are when they're executing their tactical plans, I mean, of course, we've been privy to seeing plenty of great teams in our generation. And I mean, is there certain components and certain aspects of football, or certain aspects of tactical football, that you've seen they've all shared in common? Is there a few things that you can name that you would say, okay, maybe the Milan team of the late 80s, or Barcelona of the, you know, the previous generation, or I don't know, Inter Milan of the 2009-2010. I mean, just great teams in general. Is there certain things that they share, tactically speaking, that you could identify?
It's important to know that there's a difference between tactics and strategy. If we're talking about strategy, then you could probably find some features these teams have in common, a specific balance, specific coverage of specific actions, intensity, compactness. I would say these things would be able to find in most successful teams, especially nowadays. I'm not a big fan of the 90s and of the last decade. I think it was one of the worst football, strategically speaking, played, albeit with some very, very good players, obviously. And I'm a big fan of the 60s, 70s, whenever I watched it. It might be slow. That's obviously a big, big minus, but some things were very, very cool to watch. And I think this football right now is probably strategically the best. And right now, the most important things to succeed is ball orientation, mostly zonal marking, intensity, compactness, putting pressure on the opposition. These basic things are probably every successful team shares in common.
Okay. Ball orientation, could you go into a little bit more depth about what you mean exactly?
I realized that in England it's not a big topic and not often talked about. In German, there is a word which is most connected to Arigasaki. It's called Raumverknappung in German. It basically means to tighten the space near the ball. This means that the team is like a block, a specific shape. And depending on the ball position, the whole shape will shift towards the ball, overload the ball zones, and have a specific structure to not open gaps. And the opposition has to shift on the other side, which is already tough. And while it's shifting, the block goes with the ball and is covering space. So this ball orientation, you can see it in many, many great teams in the last years. Dortmund under Klopp were very good. Guardiola's teams are great. And you can see Schmidt is probably... They're extremely ball-orientated, extremely compact in all directions. In the first game of the season between Bayern and Dortmund, Klopp was saying they're so extremely ball-orientated, they probably can't stay stable with it. But I think it works. Red Bull was great too. And Yeah, that's basically ball orientation. Just the whole team moves towards the ball, so the collective is orientated towards the ball, and the individuals are oriented mostly in their specific zones in the shape they create together.
Okay, and I mean, from my experience of reading your work and work like yours, one thing I've noticed is, of course, there's going to be a strong emphasis on the tactical aspects of the matches that you analyze. But apart from maybe a few, I very rarely see a description of how individual ability influences the overall strategy or tactical plan. And what I mean by that is, very rarely do I see, not just your work, like I said, work in general, like yours, do we talk about the individual quality and how the team's plan may affect the individual performance, or how individual performance affects the overall plan. So I go on to say that, are there any players, or is there a particular skill set of players that you identify that you find, generally speaking, helps the overall tactical plan? Is there certain qualities, like, I don't know, technical ability, 1v1 ability, ability to press, and so on and so on?
First of all, tactics cannot be isolated from psychology, from players, from quality, from different things in football. They are interacting with each other. They're basically creating the tactics. So player like Messi obviously will create different tactics for his team just by the way he is. Messi is the best example for what you said, having a good ball control, a good orientation, a good movement, good field of vision, anticipating the situations, being good in tight spaces. These are the most important things to be able to play, especially in attacking phases, to play effectively in modern football. For instance, for me, Fabregas is a player who on the highest level has problems because of his skill set, while he can be really, really devastating and very, very good on mid to low level, relatively speaking. Whereas a player like Iniesta is much, much less faced by the level of the game, because even in tight situations, in very compact and intense games, he's still able to deliver because of his skill set, because of the abilities he has, especially in tight spaces. We have a word in German which is loosely translated as needle player, because they're threading the ball through needles and compact shapes in the position. And this is, for me, a very important skill, for instance.
Okay, that's great. And I mean, you've given a couple of examples there. Iniesta and Messi. Could you name some other players that maybe are not as high profile, or maybe don't excel as well as Iniesta and Messi do technically, but they have a particular strong skill set tactically? Could you name some places to help our listeners maybe understand or to clarify what you mean?
So you want to hear technically bad players who are still good players?
No, players that maybe are not bad technically, but because they don't... Because I believe, personally speaking, that players like Messi and Iniesta and Xavi, because they excel technically, it's easy for you to identify and to pick out and say, okay, those are quality players. But I find there may be some players that, because they don't excel to that level technically, tactically, they're still very strong, but it's harder to assess and maybe harder to identify. Defensive players especially. So, I mean, do you have a list or an idea of some players that you think are strong in that sense?
There are various players, but again, I wanted... These things are interacting, so a technically good player has tactical advantages, or a tactically good player will seem better technically because he has more space, and if he has more space, he will seem better technically. But to answer your question, I think that's very tough, because it's just tough. Roman Neustädter from Schalke, he may be not be the best technician, but he isn't bad. But his tactical skill set makes him much better. And he's, for me, a very underrated player in Germany. Daniel Bayer from Augsburg, although I really like him technically, can play great passes. He's he's good in tight situations. But players like this are, for me, unrated.
Okay.
It's tough to find players like this.
And, I mean, lastly, I noticed that you obviously watch a lot of other sports and you take certain principles in other sports that could be applied to football. I mean, even Pep Guardiola, who I'm a massive fan of, even though the whole idea of positional play is based around finding the free man, essentially, you know, gaining superiority in certain zones all over the pitch, it's something that can also be transferred towards basketball. I mean, I don't know if you watched the NBA Finals that just finished the other day, but there's a lot of principles that I saw there. Of course, you've got fast breaks, which can be compared to counter-attacks in football and transition. And I'd like to ask you, I mean, what other sports, basketball included, do you compare to football in certain degrees? And what exactly would you say they share in similarity?
Could you repeat the essence of your question, just so I'm sure I understood it?
Sure. What I mean to say is I see you mentioning other sports, and what sports could you compare to football, and what aspects in particular would you say they share?
I've seen a picture of statistical analysis in the NBA, where it was very visible that diagonal passes into the most congested zone around the rim were the most effective to create successful attacks at the rim. So this is a principle I like in football, just diagonality. And it's in basketball visible too. The pick and roll is just creating problems and short overloads in basketball. You could probably do this in a different way. Obviously, you can't pick and roll in football, but you can do something similar. Set pieces could obviously profit from American football. I've read stories about Gretzky and his father in training. I think the stuff Gretzky's father did would be quite cool if applied to football. There is a science, there is a approach called constraints-led approach, which reminded me of this. And things like this are probably very, very cool to integrate into football, and that's why I'm watching different sports. I even thought about analyzing boxing. I don't know, maybe you know Jack Slack. He's writing analysis about fighting, and that you could talk about interactions through body posture and use it maybe in dribbles, stuff like this. But obviously, it's a very, very abstract field, very unclear field, and you have to gather many expertise talking. But I think it's very interesting, and I like it. So I hope I was answering really your question.
No, you did perfectly. Thank you. You got the essence of why I asked, and yeah. I mean, now we're going to move on to our co-host Lewis. And what we'll do now will be more of a group discussion. So we have other questions that we'd like to ask, but a little bit more broad. And, of course, we're going to get the insight from the panel as a whole. So, Lewis, when you're ready.
Cool. Well, that was really interesting stuff, Rene. And I really enjoyed that that little segment. Essentially, what I've got here is a few questions that regular guests of our podcast wanted to ask you personally. And I'm going to ask everyone who's involved in the pod tonight, just to get involved in like a little group discussion as well before we move on to the listeners' questions. So just a few specialized questions. I got one from Leroy. Everyone will know Leroy, who listens to the pod regularly. He asks if you'd be able to give us a bit of background knowledge on Tuchel and Schmidt and how they would compare and contrast to each other.
And who, Schmidt and?
Tuchel.
Could you repeat?
Tuchel, Thomas Tuchel, is it?
I don't know him. Could you?
No, I think he may be mispronouncing it.
How do you say his name?
The next Dortmund manager.
Tuchel.
Aha! So Tuchel. Sorry. Thomas Tuchel is his name.
Thomas. You learn a new thing every day. Thomas Tuchel. Tuchel.
Tuchel, yeah.
Tuchel.
Hipster Lewis, hipster Lewis.
Hipster Lou. Tuchel is big on deferential learning and training methodics. Tuchel is very big on changing formations, on adapting shapes, and on using positional flexibility. whereas Schmidt is much less flexible in terms of adapting in the formation. He mostly plays the same or a very similar shape, but he's much more extreme in his pressing. He's much more rigid, but also in a good way in his pressing. He's extremely ball oriented, even more than Tuchel. Although, just like most German coaches, he's also quite ball oriented, very compact too, much more than English counterparts, for instance, probably even than most Spanish teams. And yeah, that's the difference. Schmidt is the most, maybe the horizontal compactness might be the most extreme in world football, and the intensity obviously too. So yeah, that's, I would say that's the biggest difference.
I mean, like, you're going to have to forgive us because, you know, as an Englishman, any time that we talk about foreign managers or foreign players or foreign teams, it's always with a view to how would they do in England. So, I mean, as an Arsenal fan, we think about, okay, who could be our future manager after Arsene Wenger leaves? Who would you say is, like, more appropriate for Arsenal? Who would suit Arsenal more? Who would be more likely to bring Arsenal forward as a club?
As I think Tuchel probably will be coaching longer than Schmidt, and Tuchel is extremely focused on team development, so I might suspect that he would be better for England and in such a role Wenger had the last years. But I'm not sure who would be better, because I'm a big fan of Schmidt, and they're both very, very good coaches, both very intelligent. They could adapt to different environments and circumstances. So I don't have any favorite between the two, but I think both would be very good. Perhaps Tuchel a little bit more suitable to the environment there.
Okay, Rene, I'm sorry just to hop in. I want to ask you who, in your opinion, is perhaps a manager who's underrated and perhaps not as well known by people outside Germany who may start making waves in the next few years?
Outside Germany?
No, a manager inside who's under... Yeah, inside Germany, who may be underrated by the rest of... Yeah.
Norbert Elgert from Schalke, youth coach. He probably will never be successful because he's already quite old and he will never go away from Schalke's youth team, but he's very good. Hoffenheim's youth coach, Julian Nagelsmann, he's very young. I think he's 27 now.
Oh, wow.
But already coaching Hoffenheim's youth, and he was losing to Elgert in the Bundesliga final of the youth teams. He's a very talented coach. Otherwise, Weinziel from Augsburg is good. He's a good coach.
What about the sorry, Rene. What about the coach? I was watching a little bit on BT Sport with Rafael Honigstein, and I think it was Ingolstadt's coach. I think they did a little spread on him. Is he the young one? Is it Ingolstadt, or what was the other team that got promoted? I can't remember.
The Ingolstadt coach is 47. His name is Ralf Hasenhüttl, but he's not... He's an Austrian, I think.
Okay.
And the other coach is Dirk Schuster from Darmstadt.
I think it may have been him. Is he
he's
younger one?
He's also 47.
Okay.
He's maybe a German coach. So, yeah.
Okay. Cool. I've got a few more questions from some of the lads. They wanted to know... Another question from Leroy, actually. He wanted to know what the difference is between the Premier League and the Bundesliga in terms of the actual style of football played in the league, as well as the leagues themselves. So, like, English football is quite renowned for its high intensity and physical nature. Is there any ways that... how would you say Germany differs or contrasts with it?
Hello? I would say that German football is more intense.
Okay.
But it looks less intense because the space they cover and the actions is smaller, because they're acting, both teams, more compact. and German league is more focused on pressing, counter pressing, compactness, ball orientation, and intensity. Whereas in the English league, obviously the money speaks. They have the best players, they have the best paid players, and they have the biggest show. So this is the big thing speaking for the English league. There's a German league is my favorite league, although I would say that the Spanish league is a little bit better.
Okay. Cool.
I mean, because I think that's what's interesting when people talk about intensity. People talk about intensity in terms of, I think there's a difference between intensity and physical nature. I think you could argue that the Spanish league is probably just as intense as the English league, but we're just much more physical because I feel there's a certain inefficiency with our intensity. And
like
Joey
Barton running around trying to knock people's blocks off and stuff.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more space. You hear football players talk about it all the time. There's always a lot of space in the British league. So I think we compensate for it in terms of the culture of our football. But if you actually were to watch, you know, dozens of Bundesliga games and then compare them with dozens of Premier League games, the pace is no different. No different, in my opinion, anyway.
Hmm. Okay.
I was going to ask you, Renee, what tactical trends do you see arriving in the major leagues in football? Or certain patterns that you see?
Ball orientation will become more, compactness in consequence too. I think there will be more flexibility in terms of formations, adapting in-game. I think there will be a bigger emphasis on better set pieces. I think the transition game will be better in both directions. More counter-pressing, better structures for offensive transition. It's more back threes, I guess.
Okay.
You can see the back three becoming a more prominent feature.
Yes.
Yes. Is that just in Germany, or would you say would that be across Europe?
I think it could be across Europe.
Okay.
Although in Italy, it never went away.
Mm. Yeah.
And...
Oops. Go on, yeah.
More complex, more different patterns in terms of movement in the collective, especially group tactical patterns, like ball foul players maybe dropping back into a different line, like it's done with the back three, where it's in fact a back five, but the ball new player is leaving the line. Stuff like this probably will become more pronounced and become more more visible. In pressing, specific pressing traps, specific actions to force the oppositional build up in specific situations will become more on a wider scale. It's already done by the top teams. And yeah, if the big innovations will come, this I don't know, because this is mostly about individuals who create them. It's not really able to deduce because of trends. I think that the possession game will become not more focused in terms of having more of the possession, but it will become better in terms of using the ball better, because every team is a possession team, because sooner or later they will have possession. So I think coaches will become more complete in terms of what they can coach. And I think that the offensive team is right now a little bit undervalued in terms of the defensive aspects in coaching. I think this will change too, at least a little.
I've got something I wanted to add on to that, but I think Yas wanted to say something there. Yas, did you want to interject?
No, that wasn't me, bro.
Oh, okay. Dude, sorry.
That was me. Sorry.
Yeah, go on, Mara.
Rene, I was reading glancing over one of your articles. It was about defending tactical theory compactness.
The article by Tom Payne.
It was on that site that your name's attached to. Basically, earlier in the pod, you were saying you weren't a fan of the football of the last, I guess, decade or so. That it had great players, but you weren't such a fan of it. And we tend to discuss a lot the fact how it seems the quality of defending has gone down in the game. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that, if you agree, if you disagree, and why.
I disagree.
Okay.
I don't think defending has become worse. I think it has become different. I think attacking has become different. And I was looking at some numbers, and I think the change isn't really that big. It does have the pattern of normal random variation, although, yeah, I think just teams became better, and attacking became better, and often players just will look bad. Like, I mean, you watch Messi versus Boateng, you laugh at Boateng, but no one could stop Messi. So, no player ever could stop Messi in that situation because it was the perfect situation for him. That's his situation. And people will take this as an example, and this is for me a very short-sighted view, just supporting one narrative, and I don't share it. Maybe I'm not right.
No, but I think you're right.
Watching the games from 10 years ago and watching the games now, I think there's a big difference in quality in every aspect.
I think just to interrupt you, I think one big thing that people tend to ignore is that football nowadays is much more team orientated. So before, teams would attack with individuals. I felt like the number 10, of course, you know, was prized, and there was very little that he had to do within a team aspect. And of course, you had the strikers, you had wingers. It was much more orthodox in terms of their roles. So what tends to happen is, of course, you have defenders that will focus on man marking and 1v1 defending. But as football's changed, as football's become more about attacking and overloads, attacking units, attacking groups, is even Maldini at his best could stop three players moving at him in a transition and so on. So I feel like even in the coaching aspect, you know, if you have a young defender at a youth level, you have to teach him defending, but at the same time, because of the way the game's going, you also have to coach ball possession, you have to coach the mental and tactical aspects, and defending space as opposed to defending the man. So I feel, like you said, you know, defending is different. I do feel that maybe 1v1 defending overall, that may have declined. But again, even the Boateng incident, I think Boateng probably had a very good game overall in that first leg. But people, of course, will see that one little snip and think, okay, that they will judge him by that narrative. So that's my opinion anyway. I mean, I don't know what anyone else thinks.
Yeah, I agree. I think even if you look at like the historical defenders who, even from like the English game, people like put like people like Tony Adams and Sol Campbell and, you know, even Rio, I think they would even struggle to a certain extent with the way the game is played today. I don't think defenders have got worse. They've probably got more athletic. They've probably got more information available to them about the attacking sides. I don't think that defending itself has got worse. As I said, I just think attacking has changed and the game's evolving. So that's my personal opinion on it.
Yeah. I also wanted to add a point. I talked with Martin Raffelt from the German side, he's a big fan of Dortmund and he's watching Dortmund a long time. He rewatched many games of many years ago because he's writing a book on Klopp. And we were talking about something. The football changed so much from Hoffenheim 2008, Klopp in these years, the pressing developed in these years, and also Guardiola, what he did at Barcelona. And Freiburg, which was fifth, I think, 3 years ago in the Bundesliga. Mm. They were fifth. Freiburg. No one knows them. Christian Streich is the coach. He's a great coach. They would have won the league 10 years ago with the same team. With a no-name team. They would have won the league or be second. Without a doubt, because they were so much better than the Gabes 10 years ago in the same league. And that's just a difference of 10 or 8 years, 7 years, they would have probably won the league. And they're a no-name team. And that's just a difference. And attacking has become so fast, sometimes you just can't defend it, or just you come into situations you can't properly defend. And the errors are mostly team errors. Like Klopp said, he never saw a goal. But there were 7 or 8 players at fault. And if you watch English analyses, it's always 1 or 2 players who are at fault because of small things. And this is, for me, also a short-sighted narrative perspective. And that's why I don't share this opinion.
Yes, but you're going to say something?
Just interesting. I was just going to touch on the point that Rene's just made. I think I agree with him in that respect, that I think the analysis of the English game is very... narrow-minded in the sense that it's very particular and saying, okay, this player's fault or it's this player's fault, when really and truly, if the whole team's doing their job, it's not going to break down. Whereas the attacking side of things, it's easier for one player to now do something on his own, whereas if one defending player makes a mistake, it breaks down everything.
Mm.
So just touching on that, I don't think necessarily the defending has got worse as such, because I think the defending is more of a team aspect rather than an individual aspect, whereas attacking, you can rely on specific individuals to obviously break through the loopholes of the defence, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. Rene, you just touched on the analysis in the English game. I think we often complain on our pod about how the lack of, I would say, intelligence in the English punditry game, especially on our main TV channels like Sky Sports, BT Sports. I'm not too sure how much English TV you get to watch, but do you have like a favourite English pundit or anyone that we would know from England that you think speaks well on the game? Because we have plenty who we don't think speaks well on the game, like Michael Owen and Robbie Savage and people like that.
Raheem Sterling better than Ozil. Wow.
I really cannot comment on this because I obviously don't watch English stuff here in Austria, so I can't really comment.
Could you name at least your favorite English player or two or three of your favorite English players and why you like them?
Liam Britton from Swansea. Mm. I'm a big fan. He's great.
Oh, wow, that is the most hipsterish answer ever.
I think people were focusing on his passing accuracy, but they should have really focused on his positioning, on his anticipation. Whenever I watched him, I was in awe because he was very, very good. Especially under Laudrup, the first season or first 1.5 season, he was great. Also from Swansea, Key, although he is obviously not English, but he's playing in England. Yeah. From the English national team, I was always a big fan of Rooney, but people really don't seem to like him in England, and I'm not watching him regularly, so maybe I just picked the right games where he's very good.
Possibly.
What exactly about Rooney's performance do you particularly like?
I just think he's very good in his positioning, in building connections. Like, tactically he's very good, and technically I guess he's a little bit underrated, and people are trying to focus on his physicality, which in fact has become less. I was watching games of him in 2004 for our last ebook, and yeah, he was a completely different player, and sometimes I think people are trying to find this player in him.
And yeah, I agree.
That's not good.
That is exactly 100% it.
I agree.
Oh, well, Ayo, is this what... Wait, hold on. This is when Ayo decides to jump in. Wow.
No, you know me. I'm the chairman of the Fen Rooney campaign. I think he's a very underrated player in world football. Well, actually, I've not in world football. I think in England, everybody else in the world seems to rate Rooney apart from people here. So
I don't know. There's something about Rooney. He just seems a lot more imaginative. A lot more creative, and he combined so much better when he was younger. In my opinion, from when he used to wear the number 8 shirt for Manchester United, I thought he looked just so much more. He looked like a proper number 10.
I don't think he's underrated, honestly.
Because I think he's underrated.
I think the thing about him here is we watch him more than these guys watch him. Did he have a good season this season?
He was all right.
Well, it depends what you're rating him on, because are you going to rate him as a striker or are you going to rate him as a midfielder?
I'm just rating him on his quality. The quality of his performances over the course of the season, wherever, whichever position he played in.
Okay, but how many players of his ability in regard to world football consistently play out of position?
I don't know, that's because he's a kind of a Swiss Army knife kind of player. He's well-rounded. He does a lot of things to a pretty good level, so...
Surely that makes him a great player.
And
no?
We should have not mentioned Rooney, because this will become the Wayne Rooney podcast.
it happens every 2-3 podcasts, to be fair.
I should have not mentioned him.
No, we'll leave Rooney for another.
Should I mention Michael Carrick, Harry Kane?
Yeah,
I like these two too.
Oh, you like Harry Kane?
Yeah,
that's controversial.
I'm liking Rene more and more after these shouts. I like Kane and Carrick too.
What do you
also talk about players I really dislike, but maybe that's...
Yeah, we can do that.
Danny Rose.
Yes.
Yes. Man, I heard he had a very good season, but whenever...
That's a lie. That's a lie.
Really.
The first player on the pitch.
He didn't really have a great season. He just scored a few goals. But just like England, every time you score a few goals, if you're a defender, you're getting 8 out of 10 on sun ratings and probably a match of the day spread on you. So you automatically
look how he took his throw.
I don't know if you realized, but I never publicly talk about English players to criticize them because I just see them very unregularly. But Danny Rose, whenever I saw him, he was the worst man on the pitch, no matter against who they played. With Rooney, I just really get the wrong games, because with Rooney, I just get every time, great positioning, great passing, great decision-making, great coverage, very cool. And with Danny Rose, it's the opposite. So, yeah.
Wow, this Danny Rose thing is very specific. That was not the player I was expecting you to mention, I can't lie to you.
Really, I
like many players. I think many players really... They either have very obvious strengths or hidden strengths, but I really can find in many players good stuff. For instance, I know Kyle Walker is getting criticized that he has no brain, and I think he's a very good right back. And I really rate Kyle Walker, for instance. I also didn't see him often, but when I saw him, he was good. Oxlade-Chamberlain, also people criticize him for not having a brain. When I watch him, I like him. So, yeah, that's Danny Welbeck, similar. Although he's a bit strange, but
I like him.
He has some very cool things he can do. I think he needs a very, very specific role to excel, but I think he's a good player. Yeah, Harry Kane, people are saying he's overrated. I think he's probably underrated because people are saying he's overrated. He's extremely good. His positioning is great. His movement is
great.
He looks maybe a little bit strange in terms of his coordination, but it works. It's really good. So, big Harry Kane fan so far. See how this develops.
Rene, who do you like from the current German setup?
The current German setup? You'll have to talk long. I like the German players. It's a very un-Austrian thing to like German players, I realized.
Yeah.
Everyone is rooting against Germany.
Yeah.
maybe it's an historical thing. I don't know. But because I'm really Croatian, so I can't really say. But I like any German players. Boateng is great. Bacstuber is great. Gundogan is great. Christoph Kramer. Kama is very, very good. Karim Bellarabi from Leverkusen. He could do really good stuff. Kruse is... not really known outside of Germany, I guess, but he's very good. Thomas Müller is such an unbelievably good player, and he's so strange. That's just great. Post, Max Meyer, very young.
What do you think of Mario Götze? He's had a tough season, and he's kind of gotten a lot of stick.
He had a tough season. I think he's getting a little bit too criticized. It's hard for him to get integrated in Guardiola's system properly because of the way he is as a player. And people are also, whenever I hear the German Messi, I think that's not the player he is, and that's not the player he should be or he will be, because just a different player. And he's a player who can be very, very, very success stable, very, very consistent in terms of doing the simple things right, consistently on a high level. And if you let him do that, if you just give him a role where he's connecting different zones, different players, and just being a glue player, he's great. But people want him to be the goal scoring winger, the false nine, the playmaker. And if you try to see this in him, you will probably think he's not good or not that good. But if you see it in terms of him being a connection giver, and if he has this role, he's very good for me. One player I really, really like is Julian Brandt. Julian Brandt from Leverkusen. He's great. Daniel Bayer from Augsburg, he's a bit old, but he's great. He's a world-class...
Can I ask you about a player from Germany? I think you probably would know him. I want to know how highly you rate him, or if you don't rate him at all.
Okay.
Forgive me if I don't pronounce it right. Johannes Geis? or Gaze or Guys?
Yeah, Guys. Johannes Guys, yes. Is the correct pronunciation. I'm a little bit... I'm not 100% sold on him. I don't like every facet of his game, but he's obviously talented, very talented. He can do very good stuff. I'm not sure if you can find a role in a team, in a good team, where he's 100% into this role and 100% helping his team. That's probably tough to find something like this for him in a tactical sense. But as a player, he's good. He's a bit the German Xabi Alonso in some things, because he's very, very dominant and at times has a little bit strange decision making. But obviously, he's a very good footballer, so yeah. That's my opinion.
Sorry, Rene. One of the members of our pod, I'm not going to name any names, he seems to liken Marco Reus to a certain Manchester United player. Do you think there's any resemblance between Ashley Young and Marco Reus?
Wow.
Are you kidding me, or is this a joke? No.
I
don't know Young well enough to say this question is not a real question. What I've seen so far, Reus is a different player. He's probably a better player, so yeah.
All right, cool. Guys, do you have any more questions for Rene before we move on to some listeners?
I do.
Go on,
I do. One of my favourite players is Ilkay Gundogan from obviously Germany and Dortmund. I haven't watched Dortmund as much this season, as obviously this is his first season back. How do you rate his season this year if you've watched him? And do you still think he'll be the same player he was before those injury issues of the previous season?
I think it was Otmar Hitzfeld, the former Bayern coach, who said a player has to play as long as he was not playing to become as good as he was before the injury. So in Gundogan's case, that's a very long time. And it can happen that he won't become as good again. But on the other hand, Gundogan in his best form, he was world class, without a doubt. He was very, very good. He was box to box, he was playmaking, he was destroying. He was very intense, very intelligent, very good. He's one of my favorite central midfielders if he's back in this form. If he's getting back in this form, I don't know. He probably doesn't know himself. But if he gets back in form, he will be world class again in my eyes.
Okay. I have one quick question before we move on.
Yeah.
It's similar to a question someone else asked. Basically, one of our other panelists, Daniel Swagador, don't try to pronounce that in a German accent or a Croatian accent because that'd be hilarious. Would you say there's an actual difference between teams that are maybe a bit more universal in their match tactical style, or would you say? Which teams do you see are more successful? Teams that are very role-specific, so the right-back is the right-back and the centre midfield is the centre midfield, or teams that are a bit more fluid, where there's a lot more interchanging of positions?
Could you repeat, please?
Sure, I'll try it one more time. Would you say that there's a difference between teams that are a bit more role-specific, so teams where players are more rigid in their individual responsibilities, or would you say you prefer teams that are a bit more fluid and a bit more universal in the way they execute their tactics in a match?
Okay. Depends. If you're changing badly, you should not change. But if your formation is so rigid that you're literally destroying yourself, you should change things more often, maybe. It depends on what you do. I don't think there is the one big solution, but I like changing teams because the change in itself has a dynamic you can use positively for your team. So literally, a change, an overload, and positional change, overlap, anything can create dynamics which you can use positively above what you already have, like a synergy. So I'm a fan of stuff like this. in general. But if you're not doing good, you should not do it.
All right.
Great.
All right.
I hope I answered the question and not something no one asked.
No, no, no. You definitely did. You definitely did.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Let's let's get some listeners' questions then. I think it's important to ask this from Elijah.
Wait. There were actually people wanting to know something from me.
Yeah.
I seem surprised. I'm embarrassed. That's cool. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Looking forward to it.
So you start with Elijah's question.
Yeah, sorry, Elijah's question. He was very excited for you to come on the pod, so I think it seems apt that I ask you this question first from him. He asks, are defenders' individual ability overstated given how reliant they are on being in the right system? So we kind of touched on this aspect previously in the pod.
Yes.
But, guys, this is for everyone. It's not just for Rene, but I know Elijah wanted to chip in with Rene. So, yeah, just chip in when you can, guys.
Yes, I would say it's the impact of individual aspects is overrated, especially because individual aspects are such a wrongly rated, which is really important. What is really important is often something different than people think. So yes, I would probably agree. Although obviously individual qualities define what you can do in a collective setup.
Yeah.
So if you have only slow players, you will have to play different than if you have like, look, Colombia played at the World Cup. So yeah. But it's in analysis, individual aspects of players are overrated and wrongly rated.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think, generally speaking, I don't know, maybe this sounds a bit snobbish, I think generally speaking, people tend to look at the wrong things when assessing players. And it's, I think what they tend to dismiss or not acknowledge is how the team collective can influence the individual action or performance. And it becomes even more so the case with defenders. I mean, you can be the best defender in the world, but if the three defenders that play alongside you, or the two defenders that play alongside you, if that synergy isn't correct, then it can make you look very bad. It can make you look like your positioning is wrong. It can make you look like you're not very good in recovery. It can make you look like you're not very good in a 1v1 situation. So I think the first, if you were to ask someone, okay, how would you go about rating or assessing a defender? I think that's the first thing you look at. Like, what do you look for? Do you look at the technical aspect? Do you look at their body posture? How quick and how intense they are in the press, how alert they are. So you look at the mental qualities and you look at that first. And secondly, you look at the patterns of the defensive setup and you try to assess or try to figure out what is that defense trying to do? How do they defend in transition? How do they defend when they're organized? How do they defend when they're overloaded and underloaded? And then within that context, that's when you apply the individual quality and then have an overall impression of how good that defender really is.
All right. Actually, let's just get out the questions for Rene, because I've got a few here from KRN_BRK. He asks, we've touched on this about the next big tactical innovation. What can we expect to see from Tuchel? What can we expect to see from Tuchel's Borussia Dortmund? Similar to Klopp or a complete overhaul?
Some things will stay similar because it's just the German way, like being compact, being ball-oriented, what we already mentioned, being very intense, being a very pressing team, being very focused on transition might change, but I suspect it will stay similar with also maybe even similar problems and strengths in the possession game. So there will be similarities, but I think that Tuchel will change the personnel, will change some patterns, and will change the formation more often. I think it might be possible that we see a three at the back at Dortmund with Tuchel, and that will be very cool, because I think they have some players who could be very unusual and very interesting in these roles. So I'm looking forward to what Tuchel will do. I think you will still see the rock and roll football, but maybe a little bit different melody to it.
Cool. Okay. Rene, I know you said you haven't watched much Copa America, so guys, for the lads that have, Ade_DonSwagger1 asks, what teams have impressed you at the Copa America? I know it's been a bit difficult to watch because, you know, BT Sport, Sky, they didn't exactly give us a chance with this one. So, has anyone been impressed by anyone?
I've been impressed by Jamaica.
By Jamaica, yeah.
sorry.
Two, what was that?
2-1. That's bang out of order. Lewis's laugh does not represent the views of the rest of the panel on Touchline Frackers.
Fracas.
I did that intentionally. But anyway, continue.
No, I mean, to be fair, I've only seen a couple games. Like I said, the timing and the coverage is not suitable. I really liked what I saw from Chile. I mean, it's kind of more of the same from, you know, it's more of the same from the World Cup. I love the fact that they're very innovative. They're very unique in not just the system, but also just the way they play. Very courageous. I mean, any defence that can play Gary Medel as the central defender in a three in the back, is that's got to be something special. from what I've heard, I heard that Colombia have not been particularly impressive, which is a shame because they're such an amazing World Cup. So I'd like to watch a little bit more of them and see where they stand. I have a question from a listener that I think is pretty interesting, and I hope everyone else contributes because I think it's something that we've talked about before. It's from G. Orem, and he asks us, what do English teams need to do to bridge the gap in the Champions League and Europa League? And Chelsea aside, why are our top teams doing so badly? So I'd like to throw that question to Rene first, and then I think everyone here has an opinion on why we have not been as successful in Europe.
Yeah, it's the stuff I don't like with English teams. I think their possession game is a little bit inefficient in terms of how they reach the last third. I think their defensive game could be more intense, more ball-oriented, more compact. I especially had problems with City and, at parts, Liverpool in this regard this season. Arsenal is very inconsistent in that aspect. Chelsea is, yeah. I really still don't know how Chelsea went out this Champions League season. I mean, it was deserved, but I did not expect this. I've seen Chelsea before that against, I think it was West Ham, the first game against West Ham in the league. They were very, very, very impressive.
Reading.
I thought they will become a juggernaut. They were so good in this game. And I didn't watch them for a while. Then I watched them and they were much worse. Which is very strange that the Mourinho team gets worse in the course of his second season. But okay. So yeah, I think this would be the most important tactical, strategical things to do. And maybe a little bit different investments in terms of players.
When you
some players might be a little bit overrated. Maybe might be more suited to the English Premier League than to. I mentioned Fabregas for me.
Name is shame. Oh, Fabregas
is for me not the best player if you want to win titles, but win cup titles on a big stage. If you want to win the FA Cup, if you want to win the league, Fabregas is great, but for the Champions League, because he's a player who thrives in bigger spaces, but in tight spaces he gets problems. He already had to the Barcelona. Under pressure, he has problems maintaining his level because his skill set is for something different, for different type of game. That's not really his fault. He's just the type of player, but you can't really use him properly in these games then, and then you have to think about, was he really worth all that money? Is he worth all that money? I'm not sure. I'm not the biggest fan of his, even if he's an unbelievably good player.
I mean, like, in Europe, I think, I'm not too sure that it's about individual quality, because I think we've seen some great teams with maybe not the best set of individuals reach the latter stages of the Champions League or do better than British teams. I mean, Arsenal should not be going out to a Monaco side. You could argue Chelsea in the position that they were in, even though I feel PSG probably performed better.
Well, maybe we should change our definition of the best individuals. But should someone who looks like a good player but is not a good player because he does not interact with his teammates with the tactics properly, then he maybe is not a good individual. We just have the wrong notion of defining what is a good individual player.
So, what, someone like Gareth Bale? Sorry, I had to throw that in there. I'm sorry, I had to throw it in there.
Gareth Bale is a different story for me because if used in a proper role, in a suited role, in a suited environment, I think he's very, very good. I think it's just tough to create this role for him. And at Real, it's just very tough because of the environment there in terms of the players he plays with. Because if you have Cristiano on your team, if you have a specific focus of passing, of focus points, Bale will lose his ability.
He will never be as effective or as good as he was for Spurs in that regard because everything was centered around him. He had freedom, you know, all the sequences, all the shape was suited to him, whilst, you know, the patterns for Real Madrid are based around getting the best out of Cristiano Ronaldo. So, I mean, it's there's always going to be a certain balance in terms of adapting to your best players, but making sure you do what's best for your team. And of course, you want to get the best out of your best players. But I agree. I think, again, it goes back to how do we rate players. And, you know, yes, as an individual player, that player can look very strong. But if he thrives at the expense of his team, how strong is he really? And maybe we should start looking at how players adapt to the team and maybe giving that credit as much as we give players credit for the individual contribution.
Are you from the US? Is anyone from the US in here? No?
No, we're all from London.
Do you know Jermaine Jones from the US national team?
Yeah.
Often to refer to him as a good individual player. For me, he's a walking catastrophe because he's such a bad player because he destroys every possible actions the collective has. And for me, this is not a good individual. Even if he might look like a superb athlete, even if he is not, he's not bad technically, but he just plays like shit. So, he's a bad player, he's a bad individual, even if he doesn't look like it.
Alright, fair enough. Alright guys, let's try and run through a few more listeners' questions, because we're running out of time a little bit. To what extent should development of young players be prioritised? Like, maybe Wilshere starting over Santi, for example. That's from Jazz LPH.
Jack Wilshere. An interesting prospect. It depends on what Arsenal's goals are, really. I think you guys have passed the stage now where it's kind of... Like, you always want to have one eye on the future, whatever team you are, but you need to be winning and you need to be going for the big titles now. So, it's whoever you feel can perform that role to the high quality. And if we're going off what we saw last season, Jack Wilshere was impressive when fit, but Santi Cazorla was maybe one of the best half a dozen, 10 players in the league. I don't see any reason why that should be any different this season. So, for me, if I was Arsene Wenger, I would be starting with Santi Cazorla until proven otherwise.
I think when we're talking about somebody like Jack Wilshere, I think we've got to look at it from all types of factors. You've got to look at it for the benefit of the team now, and also how highly do you rate his talent. And if we've heard the likes of Man City snooping around, and if you want to keep him long term, he obviously has to be getting some sort of minute. Arsenal have a lot of quality players, so I do think it would make sense to prioritise Jack Wilshere over somebody like Santi Cazorla, because he may possibly leave. But I don't like the fact that it's a rigid switch between offset between Cazorla and Wilshere. I'm pretty sure that both players can play in the same team together. Whereas we've also playing that 4-1-4-1 system they played earlier in the season where Wilshere's 5, and you could have like maybe a Coquelin, Wilshere and Cazorla midfield, maybe Ozil playing on the wide positions and drifting inwards, or maybe the same system now. The kind of 4-2-3-1, and maybe have Wilshere occupying Ramsey's position
on the right.
Which I think he'll be amazing at, because he's a lot better. He makes better decisions in the final third, I believe, with his passing, and he's a lot more of a dangerous ball carrier. Yeah. So Yeah, so I think there's options. But yeah, me personally, I'll be really looking to put Jack Wilshere into my first team. I think he's an excellent player.
Okay,
cool. That's what it pains me to say.
Underscore Don Max asks, knowing Liverpool owe QPR 20% for the sale of Raheem Sterling, do you think 40 million is enough? And a subsequent question to do with Raheem Sterling, Sando X Han, I can't pronounce his name for shit, but he asked, how do you think Sterling will do at Manchester City if he does go to Manchester City? So, essentially, who would take? I think we've had this discussion before. Rene, I don't know what your point, what your opinion is on Raheem Sterling, but would he be a good fit for a club in Bundesliga? Do you think he's worth 40 million, 50 million? Us being branded about.
I think the only club who could play this money is Bayern, and I'm not sure if Bayern would buy him. So it's tough to say. I think he might be suited very well to Guardiola style, but I think there are better options than him in Germany.
Do you actually think there's any truth in that Bayern Munich link? Because there was a few rumblings that Guardiola wanted him, and I just sort of looked at the rumors like, really? I can't see it personally.
Even if he goes to Bayern, the rumors have no substance. They don't have any clue what Guardiola is looking for and what he wants to buy. There are so many rumors on who will buy and buy, and no one has a clue because Bayern since summer is there. They have put a close on the insider information as much as they could. So I really don't think that anyone has really good information on who Bayern will get. So even if they get Sterling, it was just a lucky guess. And I don't think there is any substance to the rumours.
Okay. And guys, for those who watch the Premier League, how do we think Sterling, if he does go to City, how do we think he would do?
Excellent.
Well, firstly...
No, you go first. I've talked too much.
I was going to say, firstly, well, considering the amount of money they're willing to spend on him, you can guarantee that he's probably going to be in their starting lineup. So we'll definitely get the opportunity of having the game time to obviously do what he's been doing at Liverpool without the stress of the contract issues where he can just concentrate on his football. So I think that's definitely going to help him in that respect. And the type of football they play is very direct. He's obviously quite direct himself, so it's probably going to just benefit the style of play they've really got.
Okay. I think Yas is definitely outside. Police seem like they're chasing him or something.
Yeah, police are chasing Yas right now. I don't know what crime he's committed.
He's got 4 stars in GTA.
I literally was just wanting to write into the conversation, is Shango Daddy running away from the police?
Shango Daddy does sound like a good criminal.
Don't worry, I'll mute it until I talk again, innit?
Shango Daddy does sound like a criminal name. Like, I would be very scared if I heard, you know.
Shango Daddy, yeah.
Imagine if the police is coming to you and you're saying, hello, my name is Shango Daddy. They will capture you immediately. What a...
Sounds like a sex offender. Shango Daddy, jeez.
You have to give them a German name. Everyone fear of Germans. They
what would Shango Daddy translate to in German?
I don't know what it's in English.
Oh my god. Yeah, sorry, Yas. Yeah, what's the next question?
Okay, next question. I've got one from Pitchside Mark. I think we'll keep this as the last question because we are running out of time. Does culture play a part in how a player's ability and potential is judged? I.e., Terry Butcher approach equates to Phil Jones being potentially really good. And when do we differentiate potential and actual ability? So I think Mark is kind of likening Phil Jones to
Terry Butcher
because of that whole warrior thing. And in England, you're perceived, if you have that warrior nature about you, you're kind of perceived as a good defender because of
that. Like me personally speaking, I mean, I could see the problems with culture being taken into account when assessing players, because obviously you want it to be objective and you want it to be, you know, based on just football ability. But I think that's one of the things that makes football special is the fact that, you know, there's different cultures in different countries, there's different cultures in different clubs, you know. And style of play, style of approach is just as important as execution of approach to you know, in terms of the entertainment aspect of football. So, I mean, when you're judging a player, I mean, it's going to be natural. If you're a certain player in Brazil, they're going to look at that skill set based around their culture. And I think ultimately, you know, as much stick as someone like Steven Gerrard got for being, you know, the typical British central midfielder, and you compare him to Andrea Pirlo and Xavi, I think at the end of the day, Steven Gerrard really, what he done, even if it was English style, he done it very, 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 very well. And well, he did it to a last time. So I think whilst, again, you can see the problems with looking at culture, I think that's what makes football special, and I think that shouldn't be removed from the game.
Cool. Anyway, okay, Rene, thanks for coming on. It's been a pleasure having you. I hope you've enjoyed yourself.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime, mate. And guys, thanks for joining us. We will be back next week with another pod. Ciao.
Ciao.
Bye.
Bye. Woo-hoo!
It wasn't easy, but nothing it is. No. When I feel at the middle, and I feel that I need a when I lie and I'm easy all of the time, but I never show what I need to. It's not my problem.